This is an ABC podcast.
It's like that movie in The Croods. Huh? People wanted to stay in the cave. Some wanted to stay in the cave, and that young girl, she wanted to go out and live again and deal with the challenges of living in a different world. Well, COVID is a new different world, and we need to get out there and live in it. We can't stay in the cave, and we can get out of it safely. That's what the plan does.
Well, you meandered to an area I never in my life thought you would meander to. So, just to be clear...
I like the movie.
No, I understand.
Australia is coming out of the cave. Life is about to change again, and change dramatically for millions of Australians in the next few months. As lockdowns lift and we move to the much-vaunted COVID normal way of life, a big part of that picture will be a new kind of COVID test you can do at home and that delivers results within 20 minutes. I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley. And today on The Signal, the rush to roll out rapid antigen testing. Can we rely on it? And what's the holdup?
So to begin with, what is a rapid antigen test?
Yeah, so a rapid antigen test is a test that essentially does what it says. It quickly detects viral antigen, which is protein on the surface of the virus.
This is Deborah Williamson. She's a professor of microbiology at the Doherty Institute at the University of Melbourne. And that test she's describing is a new one, at least in Australia. It's distinct from the PCR test, which is the one you already know about. In fact, you've probably had at least one somewhere along the line.
And PCR and antigen tests are different in a few ways, which Deborah is going to explain. But sadly, the whole nasal swab part isn't one of them.
Yeah, so the sampling part, so the taking of the swab, that's basically the same. So you still require, the majority of cases, you still require a nasal swab. And so we put that swab into a solution, we call it a buffer, and then it goes into a little cartridge. Some drops of the buffer are dropped directly on to the little cartridge, and the cartridge itself looks a little bit like a pregnancy test.
And not only does it look like a pregnancy test, it's almost as quick to get a result.
Anywhere between about 10 to 20 minutes is for most of the tests. And that's really important because if you read it too soon, then you might get a false positive or negative result. And similarly, if you read it too late, you know, you may get a false positive or a false negative result. And so, you know, really following the manufacturer's instructions is super important.
So this goes to the matter of accuracy. How reliable is a rapid antigen test?
That is a really important question. So accuracy depends on a number of things. It depends on how well the swab is taken. It depends on the actual test itself. And it depends, I guess, on how well somebody can read the test result. Generally speaking, they are less sensitive compared to PCR, anywhere between sort of 70 to 90% as sensitive as a PCR. But also it depends on the population that they are being used in. So they're most accurate when they're used in people who have a high, what we call a pretest probability. So, for example, if somebody is symptomatic and you know that they've been exposed to coronavirus, then it's likely that a positive result is a true positive. One way in which we can offset that reduced sensitivity is by performing the test frequently, for example, daily. And that helps to mitigate that reduced sensitivity.
I was curious to hear you say that sometimes they throw up false positives as well, because if they're less sensitive, you'd think that the main error would be missing cases, not spotting cases that aren't there.
Yeah, look, even the most specific test in a population with a relatively low prevalence, which although we've got these ongoing outbreaks or in fact more than outbreaks, you know, a degree of community transmission now in several states and territories in Australia, it's still a relatively low prevalence compared, you know, to other places. And so even the most specific test will throw up some false positives. And that's why it's really important as well, when home testing is eventually rolled out, that people have very clear instructions about what to do if they return a positive result, or indeed they return a negative result and they've still got symptoms. And really, you know, positive results on antigen testing should be confirmed by PCR testing.
So just in terms of understanding the breakdown of the ways in which rapid antigen testing is wrong, it seems like the majority of inaccuracy is in false negatives rather than false positives, although those do happen as well.
Correct. That's exactly right. And so, you know, because they're less sensitive than PCR testing, you know, it's almost certain that we will miss cases using rapid antigen tests. But there's a higher tolerance for that when we have a degree of community transmission. And that's clearly what we're facing now. I've said on a number of occasions, they're not perfect. They're not a panacea, but they are another tool in the toolbox which can improve accessibility to testing, allow quick results, and could support the early detection of infectious cases and reduce further community transmission.
So that's the gist of how they work. And given that accuracy issue, they're not going to be appropriate for every situation straight away. For example, Western Australia wouldn't want to rely on them because they're currently sitting on zero cases. So missing even one would be a huge deal. On the other hand, they could be really helpful in New South Wales or Victoria. And these tests are available in a limited capacity here in Australia. But there are other places in the world where they're already a major fixture.
Particularly the UK, the US, other countries are using them. Perhaps we don't hear as much, I guess, about their experience, but certainly in the published literature, which is, you know, where we like as scientists, where we like to base a lot of our decisions and thought processes on, in the published literature, most of the experience is from the UK and the US. And in those settings, they've been used in a range of different ways. So they've been used in healthcare settings, they've been used in home settings, and they've been used at mass gatherings as well.
Yeah, so you've touched there on some of the utility of this, and you can kind of start to imagine how rapid antigen tests might be useful. Where else do we see rapid antigen tests really come into their own and be a really useful tool for society?
So a group in the UK used antigen tests on, you know, about 250,000 people in Liverpool. And they showed that rapid antigen tests might be useful in diagnosing infections in people who had no symptoms. And the authors in that study, they broadly categorized the use of antigen tests in three main ways. And this is actually a really nice framework to think about how we might use antigen tests. So one is testing to protect. So testing of people and around people in vulnerable settings like aged care facilities. And then the second is testing to release. So that's, for example, frequent testing of people who have been exposed to COVID to allow them to be released from quarantine or furlough earlier. And, you know, that is a live issue at the moment, certainly here in Victoria, where we're seeing these kind of, you know, mass furloughs of critical staff. And the third way is testing to enable. So using antigen testing to allow a safe return to normal activities with the caveat, and this is critical, with the caveat that, you know, people are vaccinated and there are COVID-safe practices in place, but testing to enable people attending large events or visiting hospitals or aged care facilities. So those three ways, testing to protect, testing to release, testing to enable, is a really, I guess, clear way of thinking about how antigen tests can be used.
So this kind of testing is widely used in the UK and US. And as Deborah said, even though it's not perfect, it is going to help us have an extra layer of safety when it comes to mass gatherings, vulnerable settings like aged care, and just workplaces in general, to name just a few applications. Which makes you wonder about why it isn't more widely available here yet, right?
Yeah, so Deborah says the reason for that is to do with the quirks of the tests we were talking about earlier. Basically, they are a long way from foolproof, and inaccurate results could obviously have huge consequences. So the regulator, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, really wants to get the rules right. So at the moment, there are more than 30 rapid antigen tests approved for use under supervision from a health professional. But self-testing is on the way.
They will approve it. They're going to make a new regulation for companies to be able to legally supply self-tests for use at home in Australia after the 1st of November. Now, the reason, I guess, that there's some time in between now and then is that a lot of document, and this isn't unique to Australia, you know, a lot of, documentation needs to be supplied by suppliers and manufacturers. Because we need tests that are fit for purpose, and that means that instructions for use have to be written in a way that all consumers can understand, and that includes people who may have other first languages, you know, so people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds. Suppliers have to have appropriate support available. As I mentioned, if people get a positive or a negative result, they need to be able to call up the manufacturers if the test kits don't appear to be working. The tests need to be usable, and we need to know that the tests themselves are able to detect a sufficient quantity of virus. So there's all of this documentation that needs to be looked at. And Australia doesn't really have a huge amount of experience with home testing for infectious diseases. You know, in fact, the only one that has been rolled out more broadly is self-testing for HIV at home.
Right. So is that why the TGA is maybe a little bit nervous here, in that it's just making sure that the product is 100% right and totally user-friendly and to some extent, I don't know, foolproof?
Look, no test is perfect and no test is going to be foolproof. Even tests that we use in the laboratory, they're not perfect. But in order to, I guess, to successfully implement self-testing in Australia, all of the risks need to be A, assessed, and B, managed and mitigated to the highest possible extent. It's just that we've never really used home tests in a big way in Australia before.
Deborah, how long before we all have a dedicated drawer in the bathroom just for our rapid antigen tests, and we're pulling them out before we, you know, head off to a club or a dinner or to work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I certainly think towards the end of this year, early next year. And, you know, I'm sure I've got relatives back in the UK who do exactly that. You know, they keep the tests in the kitchen and they might test themselves if they're going out to visit an elderly relative. I'm not saying that that's the only use case for them, or, you know, how they might be used here. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of us have looked overseas and thought, well, when are these tests coming here? So it's great that they actually are. So look, I think towards the end of the year and early next year.
Exciting. Life will change again.
Yeah, it is exciting, but, you know, it is critical. So, as I said, these tests are only one piece of the puzzle, if you like, in getting through this pandemic. People should absolutely still be prioritizing vaccination and other strategies that help lower the risk of spread. Nothing will reduce the risk to zero, but collectively all of these things play a part.
That's The Signal for today. If you'd like to get in touch, our email is thesignal@abc.net.au.
Catch you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.